And welcome to the program on this October 4th. It is Friday, and it is 1:06 in the afternoon. Meteorologist Justin Storm. Ag Director Bridger Riedel's not here. He kicks her out of the studio for the afternoon. And Chief Meteorologist Dean Wysocki is here. Dean, what's going on this Friday?
Hey, good Friday afternoon. Nice day out there today.
Yeah, killer day.
Can we kill that music?
Nope.
We keep
got
going.
It.
We keep going all show if
Might
we want,
well.
I guess.
Why not?
We've got some pretty decent weather out there today compared to what's coming for this upcoming weekend. A lot of sunshine out there. Temperatures across the area right now in the mid to upper 60s. Should top out 70, 72, right around that general area for much of the area. But as we head into the weekend, winds are really going to ramp up. We'll have winds gusting in excess of 50 miles an hour on Saturday.
Yeah.
And then Sunday's still windy, but not as much. But yeah, tomorrow, already high wind watches to our west. Those will more than likely be upgraded to high wind warnings, and we'll have some kind of an advisory or warning issued for the valley as well.
Well, with that as well, I mean, fire conditions are going to be at a very elevated critical level, and it's my understanding that Governor Burgum has actually issued a state fire emergency along that. So asked Angie Johnson, NDSU Extension Farm and Safety Specialist, to join us to talk a little bit about that. And Angie, I got your email here about what's going on there, that Governor Burgum had issued a statewide fire emergency in response to rapid wildfire response. Just this week alone, 67 fires had been reported, burning 3,500 acres in North Dakota. What is going on out there?
Yeah, no, it's thank you so much for having me on today, because we definitely need to talk about the fire risk that's out there right now with harvest conditions. And so as we speak, I was even just notified of a combine fire taking place in North Dakota. So having these amped up winds that are going to be coming tonight into tomorrow and fading into Sunday, it's going to be prime fire conditions for this harvest equipment.
Now,
right.
So, Angie, is this something where our ag community, our farmers, should just not even bother harvesting tomorrow with the high winds?
I'm really glad you brought that up, because that is a hard discussion, right?
I mean,
I'm a farmer too, and telling me to stop harvesting.
Hey, don't make money.
Yeah.
Well, that's just it. I mean, there's the crop out there is whether guys are happy with prices right now, that's a whole nother discussion, but nonetheless, there's value out there, right? And so the thought of people stopping harvest is feels like a swear word, right? But the reality is, with the conditions we're going to have, I mean, like you had said, we're talking 30 to 40 mile an hour wind alone with 50 to 60 mile an hour wind gusts. And so if a combine does catch fire, folks, there's no way you're going to be quick enough to get it stopped in the combine, let alone stop it from spreading to adjacent fields or adjacent grasslands that are going to catch fire quickly.
Well, you think about that too. I mean, you get one spark that sets something up, and if that wind catches it, I mean, those fires are going to be moving at 40 miles an hour to the west. You won't
Absolutely.
Be able to catch up with it, especially with how fast, you know, the dry kindle, especially with corn, how fast that just ignites. But, how do these combines catch on fire? What is going on that causes these combines to just combust?
You know, and in good extension fashion, right, the answer is it depends. So there's a lot of things that have to go right in order to go wrong. And so what I mean by that is typically, you know, when we look at these newer combines, so many pieces are now plastic, right? Mm-hmm. And so extremely, once a fire starts, it just eats at that plastic very quickly. The one thing that I like to talk about is faulty bearings. So bearings are what makes our rollers and our pulleys and our belts and everything constantly spin and turn. And it's natural. Those bearings, they get wore out over time. I mean, these combines are harvesting many, many hundreds, if not thousands of acres for some folks. And so over time, they naturally wear out. And when they do, the pieces inside those bearings start to fall apart. And so now you've got little metal pieces, shards that heat up really, really quickly because of friction and rubbing together. And so they can get excessive temperatures to start a fire, or because of that rubbing motion, they can also spark and cause fire that way. And what happens is, is when you're combining, you have all of this chaff, this dust, the plant material. I mean, you think about how many tons of plant material you're moving through that machine. It accumulates. It doesn't all just come out the back end. A lot of it gets captured in nooks and crannies of the machine, as well as, you know, when it's this windy, some of it's going to blow right back into the engine compartment and cause mistakes like that. And so I really look at bearings. I also look at the wiring system. So many of these combines are now, you know, it's huge electrical fuses and electrical controls. And so it doesn't take much for if you're noticing fuses blowing out, there's probably a reason why. You need to stop and check out what's going on and keep an eye on your temperature gauges. If you start seeing any of that stuff go out of whack, you need to stop what you're doing immediately and figure out what's happening.
Right. So what's a good prep for combines to try and minimize that risk of a combine fire? What should someone be doing or looking for at a regular basis, especially on days where we have those critical fire conditions?
Yeah, you bring up a great question. So I'm gonna take a step back and go back to you guys' first comments with the conditions that are coming this weekend. If you can stop harvest for just a day, I know how hard that is, and I know that's a big ask, but if we could not harvest during that high wind, that high fire risk condition, that's gonna be step number one. And after that, if you have to harvest, if you have to go, I get it. We really got to be diligent we got to make frequent stops and get a portable air compressor and take compressed air and blow out our machine. So we need to get that dirt, that chaff, the plant material. We need to blow out our combine as frequently as we can and do our best. It's not going to be squeaky clean. That's not what I'm asking for. I'm asking you to just remove as much accumulated debris and get it off the engine, get it off any of the drives of the combine, get that stuff off and keep an eye on lubricating everything. And the other good habit to get into is use an infrared thermometer and measure the temperature of your bearings, right? And so by monitoring that temperature, if you start to see bearings go up in temperature, increase, that's a pretty good indicator that you've got a bearing that's going out or that's bad. And so stop, take the time and fix it before a fire does get started. So those are two really big preventative things. The other thing I really encourage growers to do if they're gonna combine this weekend, take a disc, take a chisel plow, and go dig a soil perimeter. And what that's gonna do is prevent, if a fire does start, it's going to prevent that fire from jumping to the next field. And so with the high winds we're going to have, I suggest making a couple passes so you have a really nice wide soil perimeter to prevent that fire from jumping and escaping to the next field.
And it's not just combine equipment that can start these fires. I mean, one, it could be chains dragging down the interstate like several years ago. I mean, off of I-29 caught on fire because of that. So I think that would be another thing to keep an eye on, would be just making sure those loads are securely fastened. You're not dragging cords or ratchet straps that are bouncing off the pavement at 80 miles an hour. I mean, you get, like I said, one spark can start it off, so keep that in mind. But also, in terms of just vehicles driving into fields, I mean, the exhaust systems on these vehicles and trucks can start grass and kindle on fire.
You bring up a great point that I'm glad you're discussing. And so don't park your pickup or a car in the ditch with all that dry grass right now. Because like you said, you know, with your exhaust system, that gets thousands of degrees. And so you don't want to unintentionally start a fire that way just by simply parking a vehicle in the ditch. Park it out on the soil surface. Park it out on the field where you've got some type of soil or something buried, you know, as a barrier to prevent that ditch from catching fire.
Mm-hmm. Now, I did have a question. I don't know if you have the answer for this or not, but in terms of yesterday at 2 o'clock, Governor Burgum issued that statewide fire emergency. What is a statewide fire emergency, if you have the answer for that?
Yeah, no, that's a great question. So basically what that initiated is now there are emergency services ready to go to be deployed. You know, we have access to additional resources in order to combat those fires and really help provide awareness too that this situation it's not good. I mean, the fact that we've had 67 fires in 1 week, and most of it has been caused by farm equipment. And so, it's just a really good eye opener to understand that this is a huge problem. And with the weather coming up this weekend, it's not going to get better right away. And so just being mindful and understanding that the conditions are dire right now.
And Angie, with all those majority of those fires being caused by farming equipment, can the governor issue a not like just put a halt to harvest for one day, or is that not
an idea? I would not be popular. I can't speak to those answers. I have no idea what, you know, powers that position would have. I doubt it. But yeah, I would be shocked if we ever got to that position.
Right.
And so that's why we're really focusing on the preventative side. And on the plus side, it's kind of a plus and negative, but, you know, oftentimes we don't want to stop harvest because of a threat of rain, right? Well, luckily in the forecast, there doesn't seem to be any moisture, but that's also unlucky because that's why we're in the position we're in. So catch 22, right. I guess.
Well,
but
I guess
being able to stop is going to be huge.
And the good news is the winds look much lighter all of next week. So at least the majority of it.
Dry.
Yeah, and dry. That's the bad news. But at least the winds will lighten up next week. So,
that's just it. I mean, that's exactly right. Right. So if we can just stop this weekend, at least tomorrow, we're going to easily be able to pick back up because the winds are going to subside.
Right,
so I think that's a huge positive. And the other thing is we are not at sunflower harvest yet. If we were harvesting sunflowers, holy smokes, this conversation would get 20 times more. We'd need more power because sunflowers are definitely a bigger fire hazard than soybean is right now.
Well, Angie, I appreciate you coming on here and speaking on this matter with us, especially on short notice. So thank you for jumping on. If someone wanted to get a little more information, whether or not it was about this, the fire conditions, or just in terms of what you do with NDSU and farm and safety, being the specialist there, you got a website they could go to either get in contact with you or get more information from the extension?
Yeah, absolutely. Just use your favorite search engine, type in NDSU Farm Safety, and my webpage will pop up.
Awesome. And I know you guys have got a bunch of classes and camps going on. Anything recently coming up, or is these just plans down the road at this point? Because I know you just had a bunch that got finished.
Yep. So the fall season is usually our planning for winter meeting season and summer as well. So our camps, we'll get those. Once we get the dates and locations locked, then I'll work with you guys. We'll get those announced because our plan is to come back to Fargo with one of our camps. And so I'm excited. We'll do a nice release with you guys on that. Otherwise, just really, we're focusing on some grain bin safety as well, just because there's still so much of last year's crop in the bin. So we're having quite a few discussions and conversations about grain bin safety and handling as well. So those right now, that's kind of where we're at with just kind of planning and getting ready for next year.
Awesome. Well, appreciate it, Angie. Thank you for coming on.
Yeah, thank you both. Please stay safe this weekend.
You too, Angie.
We'll do our best. And we'll take a quick moment here, get caught up with the American Ag Network. Coming up on the program, I got a real treat for you coming up here. We're going to dive back in time to 1957 and relive a document the Fargo F5 tornado that changed meteorology forever. So we'll tackle that and so much more when we come back. And welcome back to the program. Thanks for rejoining us. 1:23 right now on this Friday, October 4th. Hey, if you want to be a part of the conversation today, ask any questions, feel free to do so. Give us a call, 701-293-9000. You can always email us as well, weather@flagfamily.com. Live stream each and every single day, Facebook and YouTube Live. And if you're free and you want to, I'd recommend pulling up that live stream today. We'll be playing a video for you coming up here. We're going to dive back in time many, many years ago, 1957. We're going to re-experience a documentation of the F5 tornado that devastated the city of Fargo back then and eventually moved off over into Minnesota. So we're going to be going over that and, you know, finding out why it was that that tornado changed meteorology forever and really defined what the field of science was going to be in meteorology. And I know that this is a well-talked about tornado, Dean. A lot of people have referenced this in research papers. And
this is what sparked the F scale, because this is the tornado that Dr. Ted Fujita from University of Chicago came up here to survey. Mm-hmm. And like you said, this changed forecasting for tornadoes and how they're categorized and how they form everything. Yeah, it just out of something bad, something good has come.
Yeah, it really has. So we got that coming up here. We're going to play it after news here in just a few moments. So if you want to queue up the live streams on Facebook or YouTube Live, just search Weather and Ag in Focus. It's where we live stream every single day. That way you can get the other half of the audio and get the visualization of what this tornado looked like and all the great stuff that's embedded in this video. So we'll be doing that here in just a few moments. And again, and if you want to call in with questions after that, 701-293-9000. Also coming up on the program today, we got to round out our dumb off trivia. We'll be doing that in our last segment where we'll play on your behalf. And if we get the most points in trivia, well, we win you a fun prize. And everybody who signs up is registered to win a grand prize that we'll be drawing here. I think we're doing it at the end of the month. And if you want to register for that, you can head over on the website, wdayradionow.com. Scroll all the way down to the bottom, and you'll see Weather and Ag in Focus Trivia. And you can sign up there. And again, we'll play on your behalf for each time we play Dumb Off Trivia through the week. And the winners get a little something special. And everybody, including the winner, is still eligible to win that grand prize. So you can head over there. Let's see. What else do we got going on? We hit on the forecast already, didn't we?
Pretty much. We can go through it again, though, because...
Sure, why don't we just do a quick recap on the weekend?
So we're looking at, a windy weekend, obviously. We've been talking all about it. And today, probably the pick day out of the next three with less wind. Still breezy out there with winds out of the south, about 10 to 25. About 70 to 72 today, right in that general area with sunny skies. Tonight, we'll drop down into the mid-50s briefly, then see temperatures rise towards morning as those southerly winds really start to ramp up, 20 to 35, and very windy conditions during the day on Thursday.
That sounds really, really windy.
30.
I just thought I'd give you the wind sound effects. I'm here to help.
Even when she's not here, she's still here to help.
She still likes to help.
Yeah. Arr, matey.
We'll have winds switching from the southwest to the west tomorrow, 30 to 50 and gusting over 50 at times. Early high in the low 70s, then falling in the afternoon. And then breezy on Sunday, northwest 20 to 35 and highs in the low 60s. Dry all next week, but much less wind with gradual day-to-day warming, upper 60s on Monday, upper 70s by Friday. Now, here's the thing.
The kicker.
The new LRC cycle starts this weekend.
Oh, I thought we were talking football.
No. The new LRC cycle starts this weekend. So what we do know.
What do we know?
Is that.
Not much.
At least the first part of the cycle, whether it be a week, 10 days, 2 weeks, is going to start 45. Off on the dry note. So we're looking at a dry start to each LRC cycle, but will it end like that? So odds are probably not. But
The good news too also is there are some systems, but they're passing well to our north.
And later in the year,
so late winter, those will hopefully dive far enough south to get us.
Exactly.
So some fun stuff to keep an eye on.
We'll be keeping a close eye on.
Yes. Anyway, why don't we hit our break now? We'll come back and we'll do that video. We'll document and relive that F5 tornado that hit Fargo back in 1957. Again, we'll be having the video component to the audio on our live streams. If you want to sign in on there on Facebook or YouTube, just search Weather and Ag in Focus. We'll be hitting that next when we come back, so stay tuned. And welcome back to the program. Thanks for rejoining us 1:32 on this Friday afternoon. Got a fun thing we're going to play for you here. There's a documentary based on that 1957 F5 tornado that came ripping through Fargo. And a great documentary with a bunch of visualizations and photos and videos of this tornado. And we're going to play it for you here right now. And if you have any questions about it after the fact, we'll take callers 701-293-9000. This was done by CF Productions. They did a really great job on it, especially for being able to obtain all of this information back from 1957. And this is the tornado that ultimately changed meteorology forever. And we'll find out why. We'll start that for you right now.
It's the last day of spring in Fargo, North Dakota, and residents see something concerning to the west. A strong tornado heading straight for downtown. By the time June 20th, 1957 was over, five total tornadoes would touch down in and around the Fargo area, including a devastating F5 tornado that tore through downtown. The damage that was left behind could be described as catastrophic and disastrous. As residents began to assess and pick up the damage, one particular person from the University of Chicago expressed significant interest in analyzing the damage. That man was none other than Ted Fujita. The research that he would conduct from this event was groundbreaking and would change the course of meteorology forever. Fargo is a city in far eastern North Dakota that shares a border with Minnesota. In the modern era, Fargo is an expansive city with a population of 131,444 as of 2022, but it wasn't that way back in 1957. In 1957, Fargo housed a population of 43,000 in a much less expansive city than the present day. Back in 1957, scientists and weather forecasters had very little technology and information to make accurate weather forecasts, but on June 20th, 1957, they had a feeling that there was thunderstorms to come later in the day, and they were right. Forecasters noticed a surface low over eastern Montana with a cold front that stretched to the northwest and was in progress of swinging down into the area. At 500 millibars, or roughly 20,000 feet, a shortwave ridge was present which would allow for moisture to collect and help storms form later in the day. Shear was also more than sufficient, with surface winds out of the southeast and 500 millibar winds out of the west-southwest. These were environmental conditions that certainly would have been supportive of thunderstorms and tornadoes, but not necessarily strong to violent tornadoes, so there must have been some other underlying factors at play here. The first of those underlying factors was a likely outflow boundary that situated itself around the Fargo area that would help aid and enhance thunderstorms and the tornado later in the day. Although we don't have state-by-state detailed surface analysis maps from this day, we do have regional ones that do help support this theory. When we take a look at the surface analysis of the area at 7 a.m. Central Time on that day, we notice that there was light rain falling in northwest North Dakota. 3 hours later at 10 a.m. Central Time, the rain had moved east and further developed in central North Dakota. Another 3 hours later at 1 p.m., a thunderstorm was reported near Devil's Lake, North Dakota. And over the course of the next few hours, these elevated thunderstorms, which were occurring near and along the warm front, would produce an outflow boundary, which is an area of cool and drier air. You can even see the outflow boundary on this map taken at 3 p.m., which is depicted by the sharp decrease in temperatures. The other underlying factor that was at play was the dew point. When you look at the dew point in Fargo in the early afternoon of the 20th, it was in the upper 50s, and by the evening it was approaching 70. And when you take a look at the big picture of the country on that day, you notice something peculiar. There was ample moisture around the Gulf states, as you would expect, then a very dry air mass over Kansas and Nebraska, and then it was moist again over the northern plains. So how could moisture get to North Dakota if there was an extremely dry air mass in between that and the Gulf of Mexico? The answer to that is that it likely wasn't moisture from the Gulf of Mexico, it was actually moisture from corn. And yes, that corn. The term evapotranspiration is described as the process by which water is transferred from the land into the atmosphere by evaporation from the soil and other surfaces, and by transpiration from the plants. June 20th happens to fall right around the peak growing season in the United States, and corn acts as a giant straw that pumps millions of gallons of water into the atmosphere on hot, sunny days. This natural occurring event even has a nickname, which is known as corn sweat. And yes, it's real, you can look it up. In a perfect scenario, corn sweat can raise the dew point by 5 to 10 degrees, but it should be mentioned that due to this happening almost 70 years ago, the exact extent that this helped on June 20th, 1957 is not known for certain. And now that we have established these two underlying factors that were at play on this day, we now have an environment that is supportive of strong to violent tornadoes occurring in this area. By the evening, a significant severe weather setup was now in place, but the extent was not known by the weather forecasters in Fargo just yet. The forecasters already had very limited resources to assist them, and it didn't help them any further that the nearest radar was 205 miles away, there was very sparse updates about the weather, and there was no storm spotter network in place to help them out. These factors basically led forecasters to look out their window and their bleak information that they had and having to make judgment calls. And sometime during the mid-afternoon, storms would begin to develop along the warm front and previously mentioned outflow boundary. At 5:58 p.m., forecasters in Fargo noticed building cumulus clouds off to their west. And these clouds would be the ongoing supercell that would go on to wreak havoc in Fargo in just a short while. What they didn't know yet was that this supercell that was heading towards town was already in the process of producing tornadoes. Sometime around 4:30 p.m., the storm put down its first tornado, which touched down just to the east of Buffalo, North Dakota, and tracked slowly northeast. The tornado meandered northeast and threaded the needle between the towns of Absarica and Wheatland before dissipating shortly afterwards. The tornado was on the ground for roughly 11 miles and was rated as an F0 as it didn't really hit anything. Almost immediately after lifting, the supercell would produce another tornado which touched down just to the south of where tornado number one lifted. The new tornado briefly traveled due east before making a turn to the southeast. At this same time, the weather forecasters off to the east in Fargo noticed this tornado on the ground and began preparing their warning bulletins. The tornado eventually passed just north of the town of Castleton before it would also dissipate just east of town. This tornado was on the ground for 5 miles and was slightly more substantial than the first one. It was rated as an F2. And now that weather forecasters had actually seen a tornado from the storm that was heading towards town, they sent out their weather bulletins to alert the public to seek shelter. Ironically, this actually did the opposite, and just as people do today, residents in Fargo instead headed outside with their cameras to try and document the tornado that was coming. Although this was not the safe decision made by many residents, it would lead to the following tornado to be incredibly well documented, especially by 1957 standards. As the storm drifted into the Fargo area, residents began snapping away on their cameras and documented the bizarre structure of the storm. Many residents didn't know what they were looking at, and some even thought that this low-hanging cloud was actually the tornado. However, this low-hanging cloud was actually the wall cloud and inflowtail, which was not really known at the time. More on this later. Just moments later, the rotating wall cloud spat out a small funnel, which soon became tornado number 3. The tornado touched down on the north side of town, near the present-day intersection of 12th Ave North and 45th Street North. As the tornado touched down, residents continued to take pictures and record video of the incredible scene that was unfolding before their eyes. Although this area of town is populated today, back in 1957 it didn't house that much, so for the first few minutes of the tornado's life it didn't actually hit that much. That would soon change though as the tornado approached the Golden Ridge subdivisions. The Golden Ridge subdivisions were an area of cheaply constructed houses where a lot of low-income residents of Fargo lived. When the increasingly violent and slow-moving tornado moved into the subdivision just after 7:30 p.m., the homes stood no chance. The tornado, which was only moving at roughly 10 miles per hour, took 90 seconds to cross the few blocks of the subdivisions, leaving utter devastation in its wake. This footage was also taken at approximately the same time as the tornado was hitting the Golden Ridge subdivision. After crossing the Golden Ridge subdivision, the tornado continued moving southeast on a very alarming course, straight towards downtown Fargo. However, just before entering the downtown corridor, the tornado made a sudden shift to the northeast, potentially saving hundreds of lives. However, the sudden turn to the northeast put the North Dakota Agricultural College in the crosshairs, though. The college just happened to be hosting hundreds of high school boys for the annual FFA convention, which started at 7 p.m. At 7:30 p.m., the boys were notified about the tornado that was coming, and everybody scattered around campus to seek shelter. Luckily for them, the tornado just barely clipped the southern side of the campus. Although the college dodged this bullet, much of northern Fargo was not as lucky. Just to the south of the campus, the Silver City Faculty Housing Complex, the YMCA, and the Hasty Tasty restaurant all took significant damage from the tornado. After this, the tornado turned once again more to the east and continued trudging through northern Fargo. The homes in this area took heavy damage, with many left without the upper levels of the house or even their walls. The Sacred Heart Covenant took a direct hit, with the building sustaining major damage. Luckily, though, the nuns were able to seek shelter before the tornado hit, and they all survived. After passing this part of town, the tornado began to weaken, although it still produced ample damage in northeastern Fargo. The tornado began to turn more to the northeast again as it crossed the border into Minnesota. It would continue following the border for another couple of miles before fully occluding and performing a half loop before it finally roped out. Numerous residents also managed to photograph the tornado as it was roping out. The tornado was on the ground for roughly 9 miles and 30 minutes. The tornado reached a max width of 500 yards and was eventually rated as an F5. The tornado resulted in 12 total fatalities and 103 injuries. Damages were estimated to be $25.25 million, which adjusted for inflation is $282 million. After the tornado roped out, word got out pretty quickly about what had happened and the damage that had occurred. Residents heard that the Golden Ridge subdivision was gone, so first responders naturally headed straight for there. Unfortunately, there wasn't much that they could do, and of the 12 deaths that occurred from this tornado, all of them occurred in the Golden Ridge subdivision. The supercell, however, though, would not be done yet, and continued moving slowly off to the east. After traveling east for another 7 miles, the supercell would produce another tornado. This one touched down on the north side of the town of Glendon, Minnesota, and moved east. After traveling east for roughly 5 miles, the tornado made an abrupt turn to the north and traveled for another 5 miles in this direction before it also roped out. This tornado was another strong one. It was rated as an F4. The survey found that this tornado severely damaged trees and practically demolished one farm. Once again, the storm continued moving slowly off to the east before it would produce its fifth and final tornado of the night. This one touched down just to the northeast of the town of Holly and initially moved northeast. This tornado had an erratic track and soon thereafter turned east, then southeast, and then northeast before it eventually dissipated over Stinking Lake. This tornado was on the ground for 7 miles and was also on the stronger side and was rated as an F3. It did stay over mainly rural areas but did moderately damage a few farms. Over the coming days, word got out across the country of what had happened in Fargo, and one man from the University of Chicago expressed great interest in assessing the damage. And that man was none other than Ted Fujita. Fujita had flown to the US from Japan just a few years prior and was studying individual processes occurring within thunderstorms. He saw what happened in Fargo and thought it'd be great for his research if he assessed the damage there. Fujita soon thereafter arrived in Fargo and began observing the damage and interviewing as many residents as he possibly could. Residents were very surprised to see this genius Japanese man take interest in what had happened to them, and were just as interested with Fujita as he was with them. Fujita meticulously interviewed hundreds of people and collected as many photos and videos of the tornado as possible for his research. Over the course of the next 2 years, he carefully crafted a written analysis of the tornado, which was way ahead of its time. The research paper was 67 pages long and depicted many things, including the environmental conditions that led to the tornadoes, detailed damage path maps, maps showing how the tornado scattered debris, and much more. One of the most impressive pieces was a map that showed where each tornado photo that he received was taken, with the exact triangulated position of the tornado as well. In addition to this, he chronologically organized each tornado picture that he received and made a full depiction of the Fargo tornado's life. He then also took all of the photographs that he received of the storm structure and drew the rest of the storm features that were just out of frame in each photograph. He drew by hand pictures of the wall cloud, collar cloud, and mesocyclone. These terms were not really known in 1957, and Fujita's research paper helped cement these terms into the meteorology vocabulary that we use today. In addition to all of this, he recorded his own videos which depict the environment on that day, and included the time shown by the clock in the bottom right. Impressively, he also did one of these animations for the position of the wall cloud and the tornado as it approached and entered Fargo. Finally, he made his own animation of what the tornado actually looked like based off of the photos and videos that he received. This research paper would make huge leaps and bounds for the subject of meteorology, and this specific tornado was one of the contributing factors that would lead Ted Fujita to create the Fujita scale 14 years later in 1971. When he created the F scale, he formally rated the Fargo tornado as the highest level on the scale, F5. As for what happened back in Fargo, the warning process was actually a pretty good success, especially by 1957 standards, with residents having upwards of 1 hour of lead time before the tornado entered the town. It did help, though, that the storm was extremely slow-moving, was low precipitation, and residents could see the Castleton tornado from 20 miles away. As for the 12 fatalities that occurred in the Golden Ridge subdivision, it was sadly just one of those cases where the residents never stood a chance in poorly built houses if they sheltered above ground. To the present day, this is only the second F5 tornado to have hit North Dakota, and it's the deadliest to have struck the state. If you're interested in reading Dr. Ted Fujita's fantastic piece on this paper, I'll link it in the description down below. As for now, though, that's going to wrap up this video. I hope you guys learned something, and thank you so much for watching.
All right, amazing documentary there. Again, that was done by CF Productions on YouTube. If you are watching that, go over there and give him a like, support what he had created. Just, I mean, this very well-documented tornado from way back there, and it's just crazy how something so terrible here locally in Fargo eventually led to jump-starting a whole field of science and changing meteorology right. forever.
You know, I was lucky enough to meet Dr. Fujita when I worked with Tom Skilling in Chicago. Tom was really close with Ted, and Tom always gave he did a annual tornado seminar. Tom did, and Ted Fujita was one of the guest speakers, and got to meet him backstage. And just what an intelligent individual, and just a like the documentary said, just a huge he was a huge piece of meteorology and weather.
Yeah, he's one of those just staple people, forefathers of meteorology.
Oh, no doubt.
Basically,
no doubt.
Anyways, we got to catch a few moments from our few words from our sponsors. When we come back, we're going to try and sneak in some dumb off trivia. So stay tuned. More on the way. And welcome back to the program. Thanks for rejoining us. 145 here on this afternoon. I'm meteorologist Justin Storm. This is Weather and Ag in Focus. I got Dean Wysocki here. And we'll head to the Red Wing Shoe phone line here quick before we get into dumb off trivia. We got Wade on line one. Wade, what's going on today?
Yeah, we almost killed us. Mr. Vegeta in World War II. If we wouldn't have dropped the bomb on Nagasaki, we were going to drop it on Yakutsk. And he was teaching at the war college there.
Oh.
Meteorology at the military school there.
Wow, I had no idea about that.
Interesting.
Well, thanks for the little tidbit there, Wade. Appreciate it.
Yeah, I learned that on the military channel.
Yeah, right.
You have a nice day now.
Yeah, you too. Thanks, bye. Wade. Ronnie, you know anything about that?
Never heard that story before in my life.
Huh.
So
you learned something new today.
I did.
Interesting.
I did.
Interesting.
That's why I was honored to be asked to come on this show, even for a couple seconds.
Yeah, appreciate you joining us. For those that don't know, this is Ronnie from the Coffee Club and the Jay Thomas Show.
Hi, Mom.
So popular, he's got two shows. You believe that?
Yeah,
well,
right.
He has a show, and he's on another show. Sorry,
he gets paid
Jay.
The big bucks.
He's got
here,
the big bucks. Yeah. Anyway, we brought Ronnie in as an honorary member to play some dumb off trivia because Ronnie is a trivia whiz, and we want to test just how great he is at this trivia.
Boy.
So we're gonna play a little dumb off trivia. Addison, you do have those questions, right? Awesome. So what we're gonna do is we're gonna play on listeners' behalf. If you don't know the drill, you can sign up on the website. Just find Weather and Ag and Focus Trivia. We'll play on your behalf to win a prize. Everyone gets entered to win a grand prize. And first person, Ronnie, to shout their name out, will have the opportunity to answer the question that Addison is going to ask us.
Okay.
Whoever has the most wins for the contestant they're playing for. And I will be playing for Adam W. Ronnie, you're playing for Eric H. And
okay.
Dean, you're playing for Mariah T.
All right, Mariah T.
All right.
Is that like Long Island iced tea?
It might be Long Island
Mariah
iced tea.
All right.
All right. So let's go here and see what we can accomplish. Addison, what do you got for question one?
All right. That is a great question. What do I have for question one? It could be about anything.
It could be about
anyone,
anything.
Anywhere.
Yep.
Indeed.
It's none of those things.
Mm.
What was the last of the primary or secondary colors to be named?
Primary or secondary?
Dean.
Yep,
red or orange.
Red and orange. Now, we're going to go for the last one. I'll go red.
Nope.
Okay.
Man, I don't know. Justin, yellow?
No.
All right.
Ronnie, I'm going to go black?
No.
Okay.
What was it?
Blue.
Oh.
Okay.
All right.
I am not familiar with the ways of the primary colors.
Color palette. All right.
Don't worry,
no points.
I'm an artist, and I don't know my primary colors
either. All right.
Neither does Dean.
It's all right.
Red and orange.
Yeah. Red and orange.
All right.
What colors make green? Red and orange.
Okay. All right.
Which of the following is not a fruit? Pumpkin, avocado, or rhubarb?
Justin, rhubarb.
Yes.
All right. Nice. You guys are going down.
Good job. Come on, Ronnie.
I have heard that one. I should have been quicker on the jump on that one.
He's got the internet delay. He's got the Bridget lag.
Yeah, he's got the 1 second delay.
Yeah.
All right. Which actor appeared in American Graffiti before starring in Star Wars?
Ronnie, Harrison Ford.
Yes.
Wow. Way to be, Ronnie.
Outstanding knowledge. All right. Which historical figure is cast in bronze and stands atop Philadelphia's City Hall?
Dean. Justin Storm.
Dean?
Oh, I think you got in there first.
Can you repeat the question?
Said my last name.
Which historical figure is cast in
Rocky
bronze?
Rocky Balboa.
No. What kind of timeline are you living in? What's going on with that?
Ronnie, I'm going to go Thomas Jefferson.
No.
Oh, Ronnie.
John Adams?
No, but that is a good guess.
Okay.
I like that guess.
Who was it?
William Penn. I didn't pay attention to history class. I don't know who that is. I'm going to be honest. Sorry, William.
And I think that's where the university is probably located, William Penn. Should have got that.
Yeah. Still say it was Rocky Balboa.
Yeah. Really good guess.
Well, he used to have a statue there. I don't know if it's even there.
They should put it on the top.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. This is a weird one. Which American motorcycle maker was denied a trademark for its revving engine sound?
Dean.
Because it sounds...
It's got to be Harley. Harley Davidson.
Let me finish the question.
Was it Harley?
It was Harley.
Wow, way to go, Dean. Tying it all up.
Well, the revving engine, I mean...
Yeah. I can't believe you would try to trademark
I'm surprised
like
you
that.
Didn't go with Dean Ride Kawasaki.
Hey!
Yeah. All right. Which ski area in Utah became the largest in the U.S. when it merged with the nearby Canyons Resort in 2015? Dean?
Park City.
How do you know that? Why do you know that?
Because he's from
Arizona. I like to ski.
I was going
to
say, I think you've been there.
You do not strike me as a skier.
Yeah.
Back in the day. It's not like I'm doing jumps, and you don't want to see me do moguls.
He'd break his back if he did jumps nowadays.
Man.
Getting frail.
What a mental image.
Mental case.
Is now.
Yeah.
All right. What was the name of the first space shuttle shared with the famous starship of science fiction?
Justin. Ronnie.
Justin.
Challenger?
No.
Ronnie Enterprise.
Dang it.
Way to be.
Nice.
All right.
Card must have misspelled Millennium Falcon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
2-2. What is it? 2-2-2?
2-2-1.
2-2-1?
You guys are tied.
Hold, please. Okay. What is the app name for a group of sea otters that float on their backs all fastened together by holding hands? Other than adorable, that is not a valid answer.
Justin, a gackle.
No, is that a word?
Yeah,
is that a
word.
Term people use for otters?
Ronnie Gawking. Raft?
Yes.
Wow.
Whoa. Is that
I
a guess?
You
did
a whiz.
Was that a guess?
Actually, that was a complete guess.
That's a great guess.
Look at you, Ronnie. Coming in clutch to win for Eric H. Mm-hmm. So congratulations, Eric. You get an email here on what you won. Appreciate you listening to Weather and Ag in Focus today. Ronnie, thanks for joining us
for
our dumb off trivia.
I was going to say my ex-wife on that last answer, but knew that wasn't it.
Anyways, we're back on Monday, hopefully, from 1 to 2 o'clock in the afternoon. The Jay Thomas Show is coming up next. Bye. Have a nice weekend.